Welcome to a Trending Topics Network presentation of Toons Game Time for Friday, September 14th, 2015. My name is Brian, and on this week's show, we bring back an old friend who's been so busy he's hardly had time for any of us little people.
So little.
But in the meantime, let me tell you how you can be a part of the show real quick, much quicker than I typically do. It's really easy to do. All you need to know is TuneShow. TuneShow at gmail.com, at TuneShow on Twitter, TuneShow whatever, on Skype, as well as Facebook, facebook.com/TuneShow. There you will find all the information and everything you need to get a hold of me right here at Tunes Game Time. Also on Twitter, use the hashtag TunesGT. So, hashtag TunesGT. Easy as that. All you need to know, TrendingTopicsNetwork.com. You can find all the shows that are available on the Trending Topics Network. Not just Toons, Toons Chucks, or Toons Game Time. But everything from cerebral satire to All Wine Aside to Old School at the Movies to Spanish Announce Table or any of the fantastic shows with the fantastic topics and all the other stuff that is fantastic, but far more than four. Thing. Anyway, also iTunes. Go to iTunes. I've been telling him for the past couple of weeks here, but it's worth repeating that if you go to iTunes, search out for TrendingTopicsNetwork.com. You can subscribe there. If you just want to listen to Toon Shows, I can't blame you. We're special. Maybe you want to listen to Toon Shows twice. So you listen to them on the Trending Topic Network, and then you flip over to the dedicated Toon Show channel, which you can find by searching your iTunes browser for Toon Show. Two separate words, tunes and show, but all smashed into one word. So how you like that? Either way, now that that is out of the way, and you should subscribe and rate us as well, I would like to introduce the prodigal son who hath returned from the great, not wait right now, north. He is...
Shelly, though.
The guy... Yeah... He's from VBColtsBlog.com, from PetsInitiative.com, from ConstructsNunchucks.com, from TuneShow.com. Is there a .com that you're not part of? Maybe there's a RyanNoble.com, perhaps?
I should look into actually probably getting that domain, just in case if I decide I want to branch off into something. But no, I think that right now, when my intro is longer than the entire show's intro, almost, I think that I need to look back at not adding to the list of dot coms to my my intro, I guess.
Yeah.
But anyways, yeah.
Who knows? The more it adds credibility to you.
It does.
About these websites.
As long as like the people don't like go to some of them. My Colts one mostly because it's mostly just cats. My cat hockey blog.
It is mostly cats.
It is like all cats. But that's why we get the hits. You know, that's why people keep clicking.
The internet loves
they
cats.
They love their cats. Even if for whatever crazy reason I ever... There's too much money in cats to not put them on your website. I think Toons would really start raking in the donations if it was a little more cat-friendly, but I've been saying that since day one. I'm not going to keep pushing that.
We're not willing to sell our soul here, Ryan Noble.
My soul was easily purchased. They didn't even ask. I'm like, here, take it. You don't have to give me anything. That's fine. Just cat.
One of these days, I'm going to wake up to a post that's Toons Cats, and it's just going to be all the cat stuff. And I'm going to be like,
the amount of time that I've already discussed that with Paul, like, one of these days, I am just going to put, like a 100 picture more cat up, and Brian is going to explode.
Like, top 100 cats.
Top 100 cats of all time. And it's just a bunch of pictures of my cat. It's just Leopold and Rock and Roll, just pictures of them.
That would be terrible. I'd have to nuke the site.
Jeez. Poor Leopold.
Either way, it has been a while. You actually were doing some pretty awesome charity stuff last night.
Yeah.
There in Barrie, Ontario, Canada.
Canada.
So why don't you tell the folks a little bit about that?
Yeah, last night was hockey night in Barrie. It was the 8th annual. It's hosted by Patrick Brown, who is a member of parliament up here. I'm not going to bore everybody breaking down what that might mean. But anyways, what he's done, he's been the representative for Barry for years now, anyways. And he always puts together this hockey event. It's always in August, usually between the 11th or the 15th, whenever the Thursday lands. And just raises money for the local RVH hospital, the Royal Victoria Hospital, which is really big for, like, a lot of, like cancer treatment and stuff like that. A lot of people come up here. Anyway, so they just continuously, all the money raised, it goes 100% to that. Always a great event. They always have lots of big names. This year they had Connor McDavid was there, Aaron Ekblad, obviously, some former Coles like Mark Scheifele, some former players, Darcy Tucker was there this year, Bernie Nichols, Mike Gartner is always here because he lives, I think, in the area, same as Tucker. Gary Lehman, who played with Toronto, and he won a cup with Montreal in 93? Yeah, they won the cup in 93.
Yeah,
it was. And, yeah, that's right, because it was after the Pens won, too. And
they beat the Kings.
I was just upset. I hated them immediately just because I wanted Pittsburgh to three-peat, right? But I was a kid, so. Anyways, yeah, and every year they raise a lot of money. Last night they raised 200 and, I should know this off of the top of my head, but I'm still half asleep. They raised a lot of money. There was so much money, and it was just, it was a good time. The event was great. I got a chance to meet, Connor McDavid at the game, who, he seems like a really, 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 really socially awkward kid. He had like his little like group of people there. They pretty much like swarmed him out of there right after the game. He was gone. But Beleski, he came out and he was like taking pictures and like, honestly, like the nicest dude, really, really funny and just seemed really, really nice. And, he's from Barrie. Actually, the gym that I help out at, he used to train there.
Nice.
Years ago. Well, so
that had to be a really good experience. I mean, for those of you who don't follow hockey, first off, you're wrong.
Like, and what is wrong with second, you? It's like the people that don't like cats. It's like, it's got to be a mental disorder. Anyways.
No, at least the cats thing is understandable.
If you're allergic you're right.
But Connor McDavid, the first player that Ryan actually mentioned, was the first overall pick in this year's NHL draft. So that's kind of a big deal, considering that he's supposed to be the next generational superstar. What, he's been followed and touted since he was like 15 or 16 as well. People had their eye on him.
Went to the OHL, right? He was, like, immediately, pretty much, when he came up, he was already looking like a star. Everyone was talking about him right away.
Yeah, so it's a pretty big deal, because, I mean, you're getting involved in circles, and that's pretty awesome, especially if it's for a great cause.
It was great. Like you said, with McDavid being the number one pick at the last one, and then Aaron Ekblad, who was the number one pick the year before, they had it. It was Team Ekblad versus Team McDavid. So, I mean, that was a pretty rare thing to be able to market the event like that anyways. And it sold out, so it went great. They did very well, and everyone there seemed to have a great time, so.
Nice. Great. Well, I know that you've been really busy, but have you had any time to play anything lately?
I have not actually picked up I think when we were in Hearst, we brought the Wii U. Because when you go 10 hours north to go in a cabin in the middle of nowhere, you bring your Wii U. So I played some Mario Party 10, a little bit of like Mario 3D. There was a lot of kids up there, so we just really stuck to the Mario games. Which is good, because what else are you going to play on a Nintendo? I've been playing on my phone. I'm still playing my Sim Build It game, obsessively. And I, sadly, have gotten hooked on this stupid game. It's like it's an Angry Bird game, but it's not your typical Angry Bird game. It's called Angry Bird Pop.
And Angry Bird Pop.
Do you remember, like, Bust-A-Move, I think the game it was called? There was Double Bubble, I think, too. They also, there's different names, different places, but just the game where you shoot the bubbles and you gotta pop the...
Yeah.
It's just basically that. That's all.
Nice.
And I love that game, so I'm obviously hooked on that. And
You're all up in that business.
I've got a lot of friends who play it, and I'm ridiculously competitive, so I'm playing obsessively so I can pass all of them so I can rub it in their stupid faces about how much better I am than them. So.
I'm kind of the same way in that I've been working on this game that is frustrating the crap out of me. It's called Word Brain on my cell phone. And basically it starts you off like really simple, like, they give you, like, a four-letter square, like a two-by-two square.
Right.
And then you have to figure out, in each of those squares, there's just letters, and you have to figure out what the word is. And then it bumps up to three-by-three, and there's maybe two words in this three-by-three section. And it just keeps bumping up as you advance. And it gives you several, mind you, several different levels of the same, like you might have to do the 4x4 and like 6 or 7 or 6 or 5 or something like that, different levels. But you have to continuously go through. And at first you're like, man, this game is so simple. But right now I'm on like the 7x7, I think. And it's impossibly hard because not only do you have to find the words in there, but right now there's like, what, 4 or 5 words in some of them, and others there's like 6 or 7 words. And when you actually find a word, all the blocks drop. So not only do you have to figure out what the words are included in that, you also have to figure that out, those words, in the right order, or else you'll be basically blocked out of being able to finish the puzzle, because if they're not touching, then you can't actually figure out the word. You can't, like, if there's a space, you end up with, like, an A in the corner and an empty space and then all the other letters, and you might as well forget it because you can't contact it, so you got to restart the whole level.
That's disgusting.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's torture.
I would get so mad all the time. All the time. And I'm not a good person to play games because I get so mad. So, anyway.
I'm so focused on beating this game, and they put it up in the corner how many people have actually played it and actually finished that particular that particular grid.
Okay.
And right now, there's only been like 800 people in the level that I'm on, like in the entire world, that have actually finished this one. And I'm like, I found bullet and I found purse, and now I've got all these letters that don't even make a word. It's extremely frustrating. In the meantime, Fallout Shelter, I've had on my phone since they announced it, and I still haven't so much as cracked it open.
Hmm.
Like, I've been so obsessed with this Word Brain and trying to beat it. I'm like,
it's the best when I get distracted by, like, these little, like, smaller games, right? Like, I mean, you got, like, these systems and all these big, like, games to play, or, like, new ones that we've been waiting, like, 7 months for, you know. But, no, it's like, I'm playing Angry Birds Pop It on my phone. So I don't have time to play other games because I gotta play this game that I can play on the go anywhere.
And sometimes our obsessions just come from the places we least expect. Because we download something silly like that and we're like, this is just to pass the time. Well,
exactly.
Our girl is in the dressing room trying on clothes or whatever. And the next thing you know, you can't put the thing down. And every time you open your phone, it's like, that's what you go to.
Walking through friggin' the grocery store, walking into stuff because I'm popping bubbles on my phone. Watch where you're walking, Ryan. Sorry, I was trying to
pop bubbles. That's the way it goes, though. I mean, and that's how you can tell it's kind of a good game or you've got a problem.
And in my case, it's definitely my having a problem because you're shopping. Put the fucking game down.
And the only other thing I've been playing, I'm still playing Fallout New Vegas.
Yeah.
I didn't play anything new this week at all, but Fallout New Vegas, I started from scratch, and this week, putting it into perspective that I'm a dad who's both wife and kids are off school right now, so my time is kind of limited, and with me working midnights, so I can't stay up late like everybody else does to play games, I'd say I've probably played 10 hours this week.
Jeez.
And
bad,
Yeah, I went from a level, like, 4 at the beginning of this week to just putzing around trying to do little stupid stuff, and I'm mainly just trying to discover areas to get as much of my map filled out as possible, not so much doing missions. But I just reached level, I believe, 11 last night, or yesterday, rather. And that's just running around discovering the different towns. Not really doing the missions, but... So I think that's a pretty successful week. There's 30 levels without any DLC, which I don't have DLC for Fallout New Vegas. I'll have to look into getting that. But that's my kick. I've been really getting into that, and it's a second playthrough, and I'm liking it. I'm trying different things, trying to do some crafting and stuff like that that I didn't do in the previous playthrough.
Well, that's a great thing about games like that is you can easily go back to them and you can play it like an entirely different way, right? The exact same as like me with like Skyrim. I could go open Skyrim, make a new character, and you know be something entirely different from what I've been.
You can basically in the very first town, you can either choose to be their friend and protect them, or you can slaughter them all and then you have completely different allies for that game, which totally changes the complexion.
Mm-hmm, totally.
So
much fun.
Yeah, I love it.
I want to play again now.
Damn it.
Well, there goes next week.
Yeah. All right, well, I do have some news, which is what we're going to get into, which is what we typically get into here on the show. However, and before we get into the actual news, I have an obligation anytime you're on the show to bring up something Guitar Hero or Rock Band oriented. And we call it the obligatory, and we
it's
call
matter
it.
Matter what we call it.
I can't talk. This is the example of me being up since 5 o'clock.
You're doing better than me. 4:30,
5 o'clock yesterday.
Jeez, I pretty much just crawl out of bed and I'm barely functioning.
So yeah, I'm kind of ready for bed. But this is the obligatory Guitar Hero story of the week. Now, this is a little bit older of a story. But we haven't covered it, and especially we haven't covered it with Ryan Noble in the house.
Which you haven't technically covered it unless Ryan Noble was in the house.
Huh. Yeah, I could pull from any number of things.
I'm sure everything I'm
here. Yeah, but according to wired.co.uk, which is from the UK,
nice.
Across the Atlantic Ocean, Guitar Hero Live's GHTV mode was explained by them over the past couple weeks, and I think you'll find it kind of interesting. Reading directly from their website, one of the more curious aspects of Guitar Hero Live, Activision's reboot of its music performance franchise, is Guitar Hero TV. Announced alongside the core game, but with very little revealed, we now have a much clearer idea of what the feature entails, thanks to a reveal at E3 2015. Here's the hook. It's basically a way to test drive DLC tracks for free. The service is presented as an online broadcast channel accessed through the main game. Instead of just watching music videos, though, players can join in any song currently on air and play right along. If you like the track, then you can buy it to have access to... in your offline song catalog. It says the new music option will always show a selection of the latest tracks added to the game, but there will also be a 24-hour schedule filled with curated programs presenting a particular subgenre of rock. Tracks played of official music videos or live concert footage of the actual bands, giving fans of the artists something extra to enjoy. However, if you miss a song you really wanted to play but don't already own, you can use virtual credits to play it immediately rather than wait for it to show up on GHTV again. One of the things that they didn't mention in this particular article, but I did hear from another source, is that once you play the song, you don't get to play it again. So it's a one-time sample kind of thing. What are your thoughts on this? I think it's kind of interesting.
I thought it was wicked awesome until the part about not being able to play it again.
I kind of get it, though, because they want you to buy the track. And if you can just continuously play it in a free feature of the game, then you're not going to buy it. There's no reason to at that point.
Yeah. But you could just buy it, though, right? And then you could play whatever, right? Because if that's the case, then this is awesome. And if this came out when I was a kid, I would have been the most excited human being ever. I think it's cool because, I mean, they're taking Guitar Hero and they're doing something instead of just giving it a new look and maybe making the graphics look a little nicer and coming up with, you know, like, new equipment. It just seems like an easy way for them to make more money, but kind of add to an existing idea. And it's going to do what Guitar Hero does, and that's introduce new genres and new, like, bands and artists and songs to people that might or might not have heard from those artists before. So I think it's really, really cool.
It's true. And they got the different guitar this time to be more of a simulation of the actual playing of the guitar, including where they put the buttons, so they're not all in a row, and they're not just click, click, click.
Yeah, because, I mean, that needs to be updated.
Yeah.
You think, like, you're like, well, Guitar Hero wasn't that long ago. And then you think of the controls, and it was like this big, bulky piece of plastic that was just...
Yeah. And that's one of the things that always ticked me off about it, because they do refer to it as a music simulator game, and it's nothing like playing a guitar.
It's nothing like playing a guitar at all.
And, yeah, I mean, it's, okay, it's shaped like a guitar.
I will say this, I find that, like, personally, as someone who plays a guitar, when I first started playing Guitar Hero, I had so much trouble, like, figuring out the game and getting the timing right. Because I don't know if it's different in my head or for, like, just because it isn't the same as playing the guitar. Maybe, like, my brain couldn't get the clicking down. Eventually, I was, like, I mean, I haven't played in a few years, but I eventually got really good.
I can't do it at all.
I was awesome, like, because I was obsessed over it because all my friends played it. And that competitive Ryan spirit had to obviously become way better than all of them so we could rub it in their stupid faces. And, and I eventually got really good. I was able to beat, like, most of the games on expert. So, and that was, like, on the drum. But, like, the drums was cool because I found that my being able to play the drums helped with that. Because, I mean, it's basically, for the most part, minus, like, some different, like, cymbals and stuff like that. As long as it's a band with a basic kit, it's fairly close anyways. It's close enough that, not like a guitar being four or five colored buttons. What was the little thing that they added, the little tap bar? Do you remember that?
I do.
That was ridiculous. I hope they don't do that again. That was stupid. I never touched that thing.
Some things just shouldn't be done, and that's one of those things.
Well, it's like it didn't serve a purpose, because there was no skill to it. It was just, like, the tapping section would come, and you'd randomly tap everything. And I was like, I'm not good right now. I'm just kind of smashing. It'd be like playing someone in Street Fighter and bragging about how good you are because you mash them in the corner and they get a chance to do anything.
Yeah, unblockable combo.
Stop it.
Like, wow, you're so good.
You don't
good.
Think you're cheating, but you're cheating.
Exactly.
Anyway.
All right, well, there's our obligatory Guitar Hero of the Week. Now let's get into some real and actual news. So, a recent study came out from the American Psychological Association affirming there's a link between violent games and aggression. From Polygon.com, as of yesterday, playing violent video games is linked to increases in aggression and decreases in sensitivity to aggression, according to a review by the American Psychological Association of recent research. The review indicated there is, quote, insufficient evidence, unquote, about whether playing violent video games can also lead to criminal violence or delinquency, but let's follow the logic behind that. If there's an increase in violent tendencies, then there would naturally follow as an increase for criminal violent tendencies? Just thinking in my head out loud. I don't know. I don't know. It was a 49-page report from the APA and the Task Force on Violent Media. which they established in January 2013 to review scientific literature published between 2005 and 2013 about the effects of violent video games. A quote from the report says, "The research demonstrates a consistent relation between violent video game use and increases in aggressive behavior, aggressive cognitions, and aggressive affect, and decreases in pro-social behavior, empathy, and sensitivity to aggression." What are your thoughts on this? I mean, I've got a lot of questions that come up, and I'm sure that I would have to read the entirety
for sure
of the 49 pages. But just right off the bat, as kind of maybe a knee-jerk reaction, or if you've thought about it in the past, what are your thoughts on this particular topic?
I mean, I don't want to say that it doesn't cause this, because I actually wouldn't mind reading the report. And I mean, I can only really, like anyone, speak from my own humanity. And I never really played, like, when I was growing up, though, like, I mean, I think the most violent game I really would have played would have been, like, Spy versus Spy. And other than, like, maybe, like, mostly hockey and wrestling, but I grew up knowing wrestling was fake, right? So, I don't, like, for me, I don't feel that, like, even when I did play any video games, that it caused me to be a violent person at all, because I am a pushover for the most part. And I'm not a violent person. The idea of getting into a physical confrontation with anybody, you know, sounds awful to me. And I'd probably just be like a potato bug and roll into a ball and just kind of pray that they don't kill me. I mean, but at the same time, I don't want to say that, like, I mean, I don't think that it could affect individuals, because, I mean, some people are wired differently, I guess.
Yeah.
At the same time, is it any worse than any other kind of media, right? Like all the superhero movies that are coming out and all the superhero TV shows, and, you know, I don't think that video games really. I mean, other than the fact that maybe, like, unless the study says something about, like, that you're, like, watching other characters, whereas even though in a video game you're playing as a character, you're controlling the character.
Mm-hmm.
But I still don't think that that would necessarily. I think that if somebody is, like, hardwired to be that kind of a person, they're going to be that kind of a person regardless of a video game.
Yeah.
A video game maybe might give them maybe more ideas,
mm-hmm,
that they might not have had, like, the mental creativity to have come up with on their own. But if they're the type of person that's willing to do any violent crime or anything like that, they're likely going to do it either way.
Yeah. And my stance on this is kind of maybe a little bit different, because I'm not going to try to refute what they're saying at all, because I do believe that to some degree it's true. For a couple of reasons. One, I have a teenage daughter who is heavily influenced by outside sources and acts accordingly. So when you have any kind of input, whether it's socially or emotionally or physically or anything like that, you're going to be affected by it. I don't think that that's even something you can really start to challenge, honestly. However, my first thought, anytime I see a study like this, when it comes to psychological relations and things like that, is to ask the question, is it cause and effect? Or is it effect and cause?
Mm-hmm.
Are people with naturally violent tendencies, who do exist, are they drawn to the games first? Or do they become something because of the games?
Mm-hmm.
Or other inputs? And that's the thing, I don't know, because everybody has their own human nature. Like, I'm not necessarily a very violent person.
Mm-hmm.
But I like playing the violent video games.
But do you find that you would be, like, situation where you get upset about something and find that you have to, like, stop yourself from overreacting because maybe of a video game? Like if you played, like, let's say you played, I'm trying to think of a violent video game. Shows how many violent video games I play. if you're playing, like, God of War, and you then, like, you're done playing God of War, you just killed Zeus, and you go to the bank and somebody, the teller's like, oh, well, we charge like 16% on interest to you this year or this month, and this is going to continue until you die. And all of a sudden in your brain, you're like tearing her apart and like taking Zeus's blade and putting it through her chest and then sucking her soul out. Or are you just like, this sucks? I don't know if my point got across. It just came across as me being, you know what, maybe you're right. I'm a violenter person now. I just totally killed that person. I mean, I just don't know.
I think it's weird.
I think that somebody would be drawn to it. I think that if they are the type of person that is possibly going to get involved in, like, a violent crime of any nature, I think that there is a better chance that they will be drawn to that game because that's already in them. Now, however, I don't think that necessarily means that anybody that's drawn to those games shares that same wiring. I'm, like, very into, like, violent movies. Like, horror movies, that's almost, like, the only kind of movie that I'll watch. And I've been that way ever since I was little. I've always just been drawn to that. And even as far as, like, just, like, my own, like, personal reading, I'm very interested in, like, serial killers and just really all that, like, really, like, I guess morbid stuff. But I'm really not. And but then again, that's just one individual. I can't say that the way that it works for me is the way that it works for everyone. Though it helps my hardwiring case, but still, I'm only speaking on a scale that I've done on, or a study I've done on myself. And
and I think for me, it comes down to some of us are capable, fully capable, of separating the whole fact from fiction and not getting too much from fictitious things. Unless we can absolutely relate to it. Like my wife, she gets kind of frustrated with me when we watch movies because we'll sit down and watch this like uber emotional movie and whatever, and I won't react at all because I'm like, it's fiction. Well, how am I supposed to read? Like, if it's based on a true story, then I might get, you know, it might affect me. Such as Miracle. I watch Miracle, I cry every goddamn time. And I can't figure it out. Like, my eyes just involuntarily water. Because I know it was real, that it actually did happen. And two, I'm so goddamn American. Yeah.
See, and that, you know what? I mean, it. I haven't even seen it. Get mad. I'm Canadian. Why would I? I mean, it's just. I mean, I like hockey movies, but it's a Disney movie, right?
Yes.
I mean, I think that I would need to be. Would I need to be American? I mean, I think I could like it and appreciate it as a good hockey movie. But like, I mean, I'm aware of the story.
Even outside of the American element, it's truly a great movie. You need to see it. Because it was, Disney has the pool. Kurt Russell, who starred as Herb Brooks, grew up around hockey, so he had a very, very familiar with the sport, very familiar with Herb Brooks himself, and just did a great job because he's a great actor. And you don't even think Snake Plissken whenever he's doing it. it's a great movie, and you should watch it. But
I will, then.
Yeah, but I think that some people just aren't capable of separating fiction from reality when it comes to having an emotional response. I do believe firmly in desensitization, I guess would be the word. If you're surrounded by something enough, then it just becomes second nature. And the more you're surrounded by something and other activities and things like that, then the more acceptable that behavior becomes, I guess you want to say. But the thing is, like, I also think that it completely depends on the person. Yeah,
totally. I think that in a sense, like, we're kind of saying the same thing, in a way, as far as, like, just thinking that it does. At the end, it comes down to the person. It comes down to the individual. Now, but then, again, you said, like, maybe someone could change something. Maybe someone could watch something and it flicks a switch in their brain that they didn't even realize. I'm not going to argue that's not a possibility, because I don't know. maybe somebody's going to watch, like, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, see Leatherface strap him down to a bed or his little work lab in the basement and take his face off to make a mask. Who knows that, like, a little Ed Gein isn't sitting at home thinking to himself, man, this looks like something that I didn't even know was a possibility, but looks totally awesome. And so, I don't know. I guess it comes down to the person, but someone could, I guess, have something in them that they don't realize that they have that maybe that could trigger. Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm trying to meet in the middle here.
Yeah. It's a complicated topic, and that is the one thing. And it's not a surprising topic at all by any means. But it is one of those topics that's been hotly debated over a decade, since Mortal Kombat came out, really. So, I mean, it'll be interesting. I think it's a good study. I don't think it's completely uncredible. As a matter of fact, I think it's more credible than not. But I also think that there's that aspect that the people who will be most affected by it already have that capability there for the most part, I guess.
Totally.
But I did put a call out on Twitter yesterday, actually, whenever I came across the article, because I thought this is a pretty powerful topic, and some people will likely have some pretty strong opinions. Let me just open one of them up now. Okay, we got two stories from my first emailer. So emailer, shout out, he actually wishes to remain anonymous for that, so I'm totally going to respect that. So it says, hello, Toon Show, that's us. When my friend and I first played GTA 3, Grand Theft Auto 3, for those of you who just moved here from Uranus, we played for a couple hours straight, just killing everybody and everything. Also, I was 20 at the time. We felt bad for the acts that we partook in, but the game was fun. Once we finished, we decided to drive down the road and grab something to eat. Well, this is where things get funny. We felt paranoid. When we would see a cop car, we felt guilty, like they were going to bust us for something. The more we played the game, the less this occurred. We were being desensitized to the violence, to where we were becoming more accepting of it. In 2001, we didn't have a lot of experience playing games where we could ruthlessly and graphically murder massive amounts of people, especially for no apparent reason other than we just wanted to do something different. The second story is a little more recent. It's from today, actually, which would be yesterday. I was walking in Walmart looking for some deck sealant when I saw a group of four people moving slowly in front of me. Out of nowhere, the thought entered my mind to attack them GTA 5 style. That's Grand Theft Auto 5 style. For those of you who just moved here 2.5 seconds ago from Uranus. I've been attempting to 100% GTA 5 recently, so I've been playing it a lot. It's incredibly easy to accidentally kill someone in that game, then that leads to more and more killing. When that thought entered my mind, I realized that I could actually attack them. Simultaneously, the GTA 5 on-screen displays appeared in my vision and imagination. I didn't consider it, but I said, that's sadistic. In my mind, of course. And this caused me to wonder how others may react in their minds. I'm an incredibly self-aware person. I have strong self-discipline. I don't believe it's a stretch to conceive that those who are prone to give in to their impulses may be more heavily affected. Bingo. Exactly. Some people are far more impressionable than others, and some people are able to control that emotion a lot better than others as well.
But at the end, it comes down to the individual as to whether or not, like, it's one thing to think that, because I get horrible thoughts all the time. Like, I don't question that it's because of, you know, a lot of the stuff that I've watched or the video games that I've played. I don't question that it doesn't put it in our brains, because obviously we focus on it and we watch it and we play it, and, you know, so I mean, obviously we're taking that in as a small part of us, even if it is a very tiny part. But what separates the crazy people from the people that just enjoy playing video games and, you know, playing a role that they would not play in real life, is whether or not they actually then go and, you know, take out the four people, or, you know, like, I don't know. It's tough. It's tough because it's debatable either way, and that's why it's such a good topic, is it's because, you know, I mean, everyone just has their own opinion, and you could make a solid argument either way.
If you don't play this type of game until you're an adult and have some form of responsibility, I don't think you're going to have a problem necessarily. Now, that's not to say there's not going to be outliers. Mm-hmm. What I think that you have to be careful, and this is coming as a parent, how much realism is there in the violent game that you're putting your kid in front of? Because our neighbor kids, who at the time when they still lived beside us, they've moved since, but their parents allowed them to play games like Call of Duty. And you're talking about 12-year-olds and an 8-year-old playing Call of Duty. I have a major problem with that based on the realism. However, we allow my son to play a game like Plants vs. Zombies, Garden Warfare, because it's plants and it's zombies. Mm-hmm. So it's a completely different experience. However, in something like Call of Duty, those are very realistic-looking people shooting very realistic-looking guns with very realistic environments and sounds.
And same as like a Grand Theft Auto. That's something that someone can easily put themselves into. That's everyday. Yeah, totally, for sure. But, I mean, at the same time, though, I mean, let's say if you're playing, like, that game, then you switch to a game like, and not to offend people that believe in, like Zeus and all that, but, like, a game like God of War, which is incredibly violent, but very similar to a lot of those other games as far as, like, gameplay. Like, where's the separation there, really? Like, outside the fact that, like, you take, like... So I take, like, the character from Grand Theft Auto, and I change him from, like, a normal person to, like, a green person, and then I change the city around him from, like, a normal city to, like, the 1930s. Yeah. And is it different then just because of where you're killing all the people and what your character looks like?
Yeah, and that's one of the things. Like, something like God of War is so over the top. You're not gonna find many people out there with, like, chains with blades on them.
And that's totally true, but I mean, at the end of the day, though, like, he's still very human. It's not necessarily real, again, for the people that believe in Zeus and Poseidon and all the, like, I guess Greek gods and stuff like that. I'm not trying to upset those people, but just on the off chance that that is not the way the world started. I have trouble, I guess, seeing, I could see why it would be more of a concern to, like, let your child play a game that's realistic and violent opposed to a game that's unrealistic and violent. But, I mean, this comparison is still that they're still the one that's making the decisions and the killing for that character. So I guess my question was, is it make a difference if you're controlling a person that looks like you, because you made him to look like you, or if it's a guy who looks like Kratos from God of War?
Yeah. And I have to say, I'm not so much into the... I am kind of into the realistic-looking games, but the ones that, like, if it's too realistic, I'm not that into it. I kind of like having that obvious visual separation between reality and fantasy, I guess. But it's kind of interesting, because further in the article, before I read the second email, which is going to be a real treat, the second one is awesome. The first one was awesome. The second one is hilariously awesome. But before I get into that second one, and Polygon took a look at the other side, because they got a response from the Entertainment Software Association, which is the trade body representing the U.S. video game industry, who very vehemently disagrees with the APA's task force report. Now, they have some interesting interesting points here, because the ASA's charges of a long-standing bias against video games at the APA, first off. So Polygon took a look at the history of the APA. The APA Task Force was created in January 2013, the same month that President Barack Obama suggested further research from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention into the potential links between video games, media images, and violence. That call to action coming after the Sandy Hook Elementary School shootings in Connecticut. 20 students and 6 adult staff members were killed in that shooting. So understandable that they want to take a look at that.
No doubt. Yeah. I mean, from a presidential standpoint, it looks good. Because if you look like you don't care, that doesn't, that's not good for business.
Here's the thing. In September of 2013, a group of nearly 230 academics, researchers, and psychologists, so, you know, learned people, signed a letter expressing concerns about the APA Task Force review process. The APA's original 2005 resolution came to quote several strong conclusions on the basis of inconsistent or weak evidence, end quote, according to the signatories of that letter. So basically they were saying that the APA, their review should be actually called into question because obviously they're going to try to support their original findings back in 2005, which everybody discounted on the basis of essentially they were making leaps. Two of the 7 members of the APA Task Force, Kenneth Dodge, Ph.D., and Sherry Hamby, Ph.D., endorsed an amicus curiae brief submitted in favor of upholding the California law in the Brown versus EMA case, which was a Supreme Court case in which the state of California tried to ban the sale of violent video games towards young people. The Supreme Court ruled that that was actually unconstitutional to do that. And since there were warnings on the boxes that was basically enough for an educated consumer to make an educated decision, essentially is what that was. So it is kind of interesting because you've got two sides, educated people, going against each other. And it just makes it really tough. But let's bring in the real expert right now with this email. From our very own, one of our favorites here at the show, especially after you hear this, only one more, our UK friend, and I quote, Dear American Psychological Association, go fuck yourself. Are you some kind of pure, morally justifiable asshole organization? I don't know what you're talking about. I don't agree with what you're saying. You're talking bullshit, and you're trying to wind me up, but I'm very, very angry, and I want this research to stop right away. Otherwise, I have this 49-page report so far up your ass, your tonsils will be playing shadow puppets. So, APA Task Force, lube up your eye holes, fuckers, because I'm going to fuck your tiny minds. I'm about ready to turn you all into roadkill. Peace out. I'm going to go meditate. Or masturbate, or both. Mart.
I mean, first of all, before I get, that was fantastic.
Sorry, Mom.
Fantastic. Yeah, I mean, obviously these video games are not affecting anyone in any way. No rage.
Yeah.
No anger. No anger.
I mean, it's a debate that will rage on for as long as video games exist.
It will. And nobody, I'm sure that even no matter what kind of, like scientific evidence comes out and, you know, people are still going to argue over it. So, unfortunately, people that don't like video games will always hate them.
Exactly. And the debate will go on until video games are no longer a thing. Just in much the way, actually, we went through the same thing with movies way back in the day. So it's not like it's any kind of surprise. But that was a really long time to spend on that segment, so we're going to move on to the next topic.
Damn.
Super Mario Maker will support more than 50, if you're Latin, it's actually L, amiibo. More than 50 amiibo. and they will let you make music, and much, much more. This might interest you. Nintendo released new details about its upcoming Wii U game, Super Mario Maker, and an overview video this week, revealing that a long list of amiibo will be supported in the game, and that players will be able to make musical levels using special blocks. Over 50 amiibo figures.
So awesome.
Which is an insane amount of characters. Included in the video were Link, the Wii Fit Trainer, Bowser, Luigi, Kirby, but also people like Samus from Metroid, Pit from Kid Icarus. I always call him Kid Icarus because I try to say it too fast. And I think that's it.
That's so awesome.
Oh, wait, Little Mac from Punch-Out.
Oh, man, you know what? I have been going to places asking, when's Little Mac coming? When's Little Mac coming? Do you have Little Mac? Where's Little Mac? My goodness, it's like friggin' Mario Party 10 all over again with me, like, standing outside of EB Games a year before the game came out. Jesus.
And
like,
it,
oh,
and,
God damn it.
And they respond with, security.
He's back. It's Ryan again. Yelling about Little Mac and asking if there's ever going to be a Doc and Soda Popinski. Jeez. Like, no, I think it's great. Obviously Nintendo is not really selling stuff, but I bet you these amiibos are selling pretty well. So,
oh, yeah.
I mean, even people who don't necessarily use them, they are awesome looking statues. Like, just little figurines to have. Like, they're really detailed and they're super cool looking.
It is.
And, I mean, no, and they're like here, they're like, $11, which means that they're probably like $2 in America. So, I mean, like, they're probably like just falling off shelves down there. How much are they down there? Just out of curiosity.
Just think of how lucky Nintendo actually is that Activision came up with Skylanders.
Yeah.
Because if they didn't come out with Skylanders, Nintendo probably wouldn't have come up with this. Let's just face it. And Nintendo has the property catalog and the nostalgia factor to make this just a no-freaking-brainer.
Yeah. Like, they are great. Like, I mean, I've got a couple of them, and I don't really use them ever, but they look excellent. I could see people, like, having, like, shelves at their house where they just, like, you know, like obviously a dude that probably, like, doesn't have a girlfriend and, like, lives on his own, but would have, like, a shelf of these, or me, a shelf of these, just, all, like, it's awesome. They are so cool-looking. So,
yeah, they are awesome.
And they're, like I said, they're cheap. And
yeah.
Like,
relatively, they are. In all actuality, that's a collectible item.
$12.
Yeah. So, let's see. Even, they're going to have third-party characters as well. There's going to be a Pac-Man and a Mega Man one that will also apparently work with the Mario Maker. And then, the video shows off one of the new amiibo, which is the one that we talked about last week. This Super Mario Bros. 30th Anniversary 8-Bit Mario. That actually will unlock mustached enemies and seems to give Mario the ability to smash through otherwise unbreakable blocks. An update to this article from Polygon actually says that Nintendo clarified that a player does not need Super Mario Bros. 30th Anniversary Mario Amiibo to actually defeat any course. Instead, that amiibo will let course designers add a big mushroom to their course, and anyone who plays that course will actually have access to it. The musical creation thing is kind of interesting, because you can basically put blocks so when you jump up and hit them, instead of breaking or whatever, they'll play different musical notes.
Which is not a new idea for Nintendo, because that's pretty much what they had in Mario Paint.
Yeah.
Do you remember the music designer in Mario Paint? Did you ever play that for Super Nintendo?
I never had a Super Nintendo.
There you go. Well, then Mario Paint, which was the wickedest game ever, it just was like a mouse and a little mouse pad, and it actually had like barred music, and you could actually make your own sheet music with it.
Yeah.
And like, but there'd be like different, like you could have like Mario, there's like cat noises, dog noises, and whichever part, whichever note you put it on the bar, it would make the note. So like, I remember used to, like, I would like put in like Metallica songs, and I'd put all the notes in So it would play, like, but like in cat sound or, you know, Mario sounds or whatever. It was, so, I mean, that's cool. It's just basically doing what Mario always does, and that's either ripping off someone else's idea and making it better or just a new version of their own idea that they did forever ago because everyone loves nostalgia.
Yeah, and what I love, what I absolutely love about this Super Mario Maker, because they had Super Mario Music Maker at one point too, didn't they?
Yeah, I don't think I played that ever, though.
Yeah, because you could, like, just basically design all the musical notes and whatever, and, yeah. But what I really like about the whole Super Mario Maker idea for the Wii U is that you can design these levels, and then other people can play your levels. I just love that, and you're getting more and more of that. I believe it was, yeah, like, was it Doom? You could actually create Doom 4. I think at E3, they had the way you could create, like, a level or rooms and stuff like that for people to fight in. And you could offer feedback and all that other. I love that interactivity that these video game developers are coming out.
But here's the thing, though. Like, I mean, and as far as, like, Nintendo, the oldest game I can think of where you could create levels from Nintendo would be Excitebike.
Yeah.
I mean, you didn't have there was no internet in 1985 or whenever that game came out, but you can, that was what made me, like, the game was fine, like, it was fun, I enjoyed playing it, I think it made, like, my top 10 list, actually, but it wasn't the racing aspect that, you know, got me so into it, it was the actually being able to design your own course, and that was awesome. And I think even, couldn't you do that in, like, some of the Tony Hawk games as well? Where you could, like,
yeah,
put together your own. So, I mean, honestly, anything that has any kind of, like, creativity like that, where you put together your own world or your own level or your own course or your own whatever, any creation mode, I'm generally usually right into it.
Yeah, the new Tony Hawk Pro Skater 5,
that game's gonna be
is
so
actually
good.
It's going to have, it's either going to be so good or it's going to be so bad.
The time I wasted in high school playing Tony Hawk.
Yeah. I'm still playing Tony Hawk 2, Pro Skater 2,
one
here at the house.
Love
yeah, it's fantastic even
yeah,
now.
No doubt.
Fantastic, by the way, is my word of, like, the month, apparently.
That's a good word.
I keep saying it, and I can't stop myself. But, yeah, I mean, just the ability to share, to create and then share. I think that we're so damn lucky to be in the generation of video games and to see this actually coming along at a time when we can actually fully appreciate
Definitely.
It. Because if I was a kid, like, my son, he goes up and I'm proud of him for one of the things he did. He created a Hunger Games Minecraft stage up on the PlayStation. And he's like, Dad, you got to play this with me. I have no clue about Minecraft. I don't know anything about it. But he built, like, the little pods. We have to go and stand in the pods until you have, like, it works perfect for couch co-op. But we basically had to stand there. He put a pile with a whole bunch of treasure boxes with resources in to where then you had to gather the resources and then go to a workbench and forge your weapon and then attack the other person. It's so creative of him, man. I love that. But I wonder how much he actually appreciates it.
Yeah, exactly.
And everything that goes behind
definitely.
It.
And I agree with what you're saying, because, like, we're old enough to get it and to be able to... Sorry, continue. Because...
Yeah, and it's just amazing, and it's so cool that we have... you know, we get to look back and say, well, what we had whenever it came out, that was what we had, and you'd...
Like Game Boy.
The only way you'd be able to share anything... As if somebody was there on the couch with you, and even the level of creativity wasn't there. The only thing they could see is just how well you were doing with the game. But now we've got these games, not only can people watch you play and see how good you are at the game, see your high scores and stuff like that, because you could easily, if you wanted somebody to see your high score that you got on Pac-Man, you had to take a Polaroid of it and show everybody that you came across. Now we, like, post the videos online directly
instantly.
From the console.
Instantly.
Yeah, create entire stages and share them with literally millions of people out in the world that we're likely never going to meet. And it's just, it's such such a great time to be, like, a video gamer. And I think that when you sit down and think about it, it's just insane. But either way, let's move on to the next story, since we spent so much time on the first one. Now, you're not going to be so much into this story, and that's okay, but I am, because it's Star Wars. Star Wars Battlefront Supremacy Mode puts Boba Fett, Luke Skywalker, and Darth Vader on the biggest maps. Now, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, because really it's just a small development when you consider it, but it just gives me one more reason to be excited about the game. Basically, Supremacy Mode will be much like, I believe it was called Conquer Mode. Conquest Mode, maybe, on the original Battlefronts. Basically, there are 5 control towers, and you have to gain control of the control towers. So it's a 10-minute stage, and you basically have to fight your way to the other towers. Each team starts with 2, and then there's one in the middle where you have to have a race and occupy their space, as well as defend what you've already got. It's really kind of a fun mode. Whether you're into Star Wars or not, have you ever played a game like that, where you basically had to capture the flag, but also keep the flag?
For some reason, it is triggering a game where you did have... What game did you have to capture a flag in? This is going to drive me absolutely bonkers. You know what? The game sounds really fun. I don't think that I would not play a game because of Twitter unfollowers, but for those who don't know, I am not a Star Wars fan. I get why people like Star Wars. I'm not one of these Star
Wars... That's as bad as not liking cats!
Absurd. Absurd it is. No, it's not. Anyways, what was I trying to say before you interrupted me with such nonsensical comments, like not liking cats? What was I saying? I was saying something.
You're a huge fan
I love Star Wars. It's really good. I think stuff that happens in space is really cool, and it's not nerdy. No, what I think I was actually saying is that I think that it being a Star Wars would not make me not like games. It won't benefit me and make me more into the idea of the game because of the characters and the stories, but as far as actual gameplay, I would be willing to try the game because it sounds fun.
Yeah, it looks awesome.
Yeah, Yeah, so my not being into Star Wars, not a hater for the record. Before you guys hit the unfollow button, not a hater. when did it happen that like the people who are not into Star Wars have like kind of turned into the I don't want to say probably. The rare ones, I guess. It seemed like you always hear about how, like back in the day, the people that were into that stuff were, like, labeled as geeks and weirdos and stuff like that. But now it seems like pretty much everybody is into Star Wars. Everybody.
Yeah,
and it's very uncool not to be.
There's really two kinds of people when it comes to Star Wars. There are the people who like Star Wars, and then there's the sissy boys, who don't like Star Wars, the people who, I don't know, I don't want to be mean to them or you.
No, please.
It's just you're wrong, and you probably have an IQ of like 7.
It's true. But in Canadian, that's like 25. So up here,
yeah,
that's not...
There is that.
I'm basically on level with the beavers. Except for I have no idea how to like build like a dam, so... But no, I mean, I don't dislike it, and I've never hated it. And in fact, I think when I was a little boy, I even had Star Wars sheets. But I got it because I thought that the hairy things on them looked like kitties. So try to sleep tonight.
Yeah.
now, enjoy it.
I actually totally get why some people don't like it. Because there are things you gotta suspend disbelief and things like that. My thing is, I've read all the books, and if you just suspend the disbelief and say, okay, well, what if there was some sort of strange connection? I think it's funny when people who, like, are really into things like Game of Thrones, will turn around and be like, how can you watch that shit when it comes to Star Wars?
Well, here's something hilarious. I've not gotten to that either.
Yeah, because what, dragons are so much more believable? The, Melisandre, the Red Witch, she does some realistic shit.
I'll be honest, I think both
on.
Are absurd. I don't watch Game of Thrones.
It's just a matter of are you into it, are you not? If you actually look at the gameplay, Star Wars Battlefront looks like it's going to be not a whole lot different from, say, Call of Duty. It just has the character skins, essentially. Probably Hardline is what I would have wanted to go with there. Battlefront Hardline, or something like that. I don't even know. I don't play the first-person shooters a lot. But I do give the Star Wars ones a chance, mainly because my son loves them, so I like to play games with him that he likes. From time to time, too, and Star Wars is something that we're both into. But there's not going to be, like, a heavy story mode. It's basically, you know, you'll have some characters. And that's where I think that it is accessible to even people who don't necessarily like Star Wars. Because essentially you've got your good guys and your bad guys, your rebels and the Empire. So, I mean, really, that's all that you need to know in that. You're going to have stormtroopers, who are the bad guys, facing off against the rebels, who are just look like a bunch of khaki wearing bums with guns, laser guns. So
I think that's pretty much it. And I think that kind of goes with what I was saying earlier, is that I don't think that I would not try the game, because I've heard very good things about a lot of Star Wars games, and a lot of times I've kind of just like overlooked them just because some of them have looked pretty story mode heavy. But I think that if the game was more focused on actual, like, the gameplay opposed to the story, there's no reason why I wouldn't enjoy the game, other than I think everything looks really geeky.
Yeah. I'm kind of excited about it. We'll see. I mean, I think a lot of people will be not really surprised, but I think the game, the more they reveal, the more I like about it, with the exception of the generic flight controls and the mode that we talked about last week, the dogfighting mode, which I forget totally what they call it at this point. But either way, we're going to move on to the next story, because apparently podcasters are sons of bitches. A Nintendo localizer says he was fired after appearing on a podcast. This is kind of a unique story. I listened to the podcast last night that this actually occurred. A former Nintendo employee says he was fired from the company after appearing on a podcast where he spoke openly and perhaps indelicately about company's products and localization efforts. If you don't know what localization is, it's a pretty simple concept. Basically, you find a Japanese port of a game, and they want to bring it to America, so they got to do all the translations and things like that. That's what a localization team is all about. Translating the game from one audience to another. Chris Pranger, this again from Polygon. I was really lazy this week, people, so I apologize. I only went to Polygon.com to see what the news was. I had a lot going on. Everything today from Polygon, so let's give them credit. Chris Pranger, not Pranger, Pranger, who worked in Nintendo's Treehouse Localization Group, appeared on the Part-Time Gamers podcast earlier this month, actually on August 3rd, if you're interested in checking that podcast out. And he said some things kind of frankly on that podcast, and as a result was removed from the company's employment list. On Facebook, Pranger wrote that he was terminated this week due to a podcast appearance I made last Monday. It was a stupid judgment call on my part, and ultimately it cost me far more than I could have imagined. I reached for comment. A Nintendo of America spokesperson said that the company has no comment on this topic. That's not a surprise. The podcast, it says that it clocks in the article, it says it clocks in at more than an hour. It's an hour and 17 minutes, the podcast. Not that great of an audio, but who the hell am I to talk? Because I'm not always that great with audio on this podcast either.
Mine's pretty great.
Sometimes
way better
than their
crappy podcast.
way better.
Minus the Canadians.
Yeah. Well, he was asked a question. About, let me see, he spoke about a question that he hears from people who are frustrated that certain games don't get localized. And he used Captain Rainbow, a game he characterized as, quote, very Japanese, unquote, as an example of people who say, quote, look how many people want this. Don't you want money? And he said, and it'll be like, yeah, we want money, which is why we know it's a colossal waste to localize that in this current market, because look at you people. Then he laughed. You don't make up a big enough group. That was just kind of harsh. Let's just say it's true, but it's harsh.
The truth isn't always the best thing to say, unfortunately. Like, in cases like this, anyways, or, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And then, at that point, just looking at that statement alone, the part where he says, and it'll be like, yeah, we do want money, which is why we know it's a colossal waste to localize that in this current market, because look at you people. You don't make a big enough group. If you look at that statement alone, I say, as you're representing Nintendo in a public forum, that statement alone, without any inkling of anything else that he said, is enough to get you, at the very least, suspended from that company. Because you are. You're representing them, and you just told them, sorry, you people. Looking at you people. Yep. It's a colossal waste. Because you've essentially just called those people a colossal waste. Yep. I'm not saying it's right that they fire him. I'm not saying that he's wrong for having said it. I'm saying that he's wrong for having said it while acting in that capacity.
Yep. Definitely.
And then he went further. He said, you look at something like even Xenoblade Chronicles. People love that game within a certain group. He said, that game is not the type of game that just pulls in enough to justify the costs on it. We got it in the States by luck that Nintendo of America decided, oh, we'll take the bullet. We'll localize that. Like, okay, because someone is going to have to eat the cost somewhere because that game is guaranteed to not sell enough to justify how big that game is. You know, hundreds of hours, all voiced, that's a lot of money that goes into it, and people are like, why do you guys hate money? We don't. That's why you literally can't make everything. And people don't like finding out that their fan base is actually too small to justify the cost of the thing that they want. And they don't get that. And then they'll say, why don't you do that anyway? The other thing, I'm not going to read the entire thing, because that's kind of crazy. Go to Part-Time Gamers Podcast, listen to it for yourself, because he also talked about the disparity, the misunderstanding between hardcore and casual gamers, and I think that's a big one. What are your thoughts on this, and even any of the points that he's made to this point?
I mean, pretty much everything you were saying, I more or less have the same sentiments on. He's got to be careful with what you say. Like you said, I'm not going to say whether what he said was right or whether it was wrong. But I mean, when you're working for somebody, like let's say I work for Toons, right? I go on like another podcast and I talk about how, you know, I'm sick and tired of how like Toon Show, like, is, they're pretty good. You know, we got some good stuff. But the cat-free thing is driving me nuts.
Yeah.
And I just, like, and, like, a big part of our company is being cat-free. You know, people come because they don't want to see cats. There's cats all over the internet, but the one place that you, is that it's a cat-free zone, is Toons. And that's the big selling point of Toons. And it's not, but I'm just saying, like, hypothetically speaking, if it wasn't all the great podcasts and all everything, if it was,
that explains our traffic.
That's it. Boom. They come to see the picture of the crossed out cat, which I'm going to replace with a green circle. Anyways, but if I go out and, like, I say stuff, even though it's not necessarily bad stuff, and it's not necessarily wrong to say that cats are awesome and should be all over Toons, it goes against what Toons are saying. So, I mean, I don't know. It's tough.
Not in our best interest, necessarily.
I'm not going to go out and, like, kind of knock something that's, like, a part of what, like, my employer, I guess, in this sense. You just gotta be careful. I'm not gonna go to a gig on Colts Corner to talk about the Barry Colts and complain about, like, the team. I don't know. It's tough. I need to think about it more and look at the story further. But I everything you were saying, I more or less agreed with. You gotta be careful. Saying what you think is not always the best option. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you're in the wrong for doing it, but you have to accept that there could be consequences.
And here's the thing. I think that he would have gotten away with a little bit more lenient of a punishment if he would have stopped there. But he did take a little bit of a backhanded swipe at Nintendo when he was asked about... He was speaking about Uncharted 4, which is a PlayStation exclusive. And then he said, quote, "He's not supposed to say anything or say nice things about our competitors." Implying that that's actually a Nintendo policy. I think that was actually the knife in his own back.
No, that's stupid. He may have got some leniency, maybe, but, like, just don't be an idiot. Don't be stupid.
Yeah. And be like, well, I don't really like the fact that Toon Show is a cat-free zone.
But,
and it's probably, which is fine. And then you're like, but it's probably because Jack and Brian are douchebags.
That's probably the main reason. I mean, and that's true, though. I mean, like, it's one thing to not necessarily agree with something, but it's another thing to discredit it for having a different, it'd be like if I would, like, work for WWE.
Then you just blacklisted. Speaking of that, we're going to move on to the next story because we got a similar situation. This is actually an update to the story we did last week. EA Sports has removed Patrick Kane from NHL 16 cover amid sexual assault investigation. Much like the WWE, who will gladly remove anybody who shows up negatively in the headlines from all references of that actual whatever, that media conglomerate, I guess, behemoth. EA is following suit. Chicago Blackhawks forward Patrick Kane will no longer appear on the cover of NHL 16, which we actually sort of discussed a lot last week on the show here with Mart and Adam Pearson. But now it's official. They're removing him. The NHL 16 cover is now going to be Jonathan Toews and Jonathan Toews alone. A quote from EA Sports says, "In light of the ongoing investigation involving Patrick Kane, he will no longer be a spokesperson for the launch of EA Sports NHL 16. He will not appear on the EA Sports NHL 16 cover, nor participate in other EA Sports NHL 16 promotional activities." Right decision, only decision, bad decision. What are your thoughts on this? Ryan?
Well, now. Jeez. I'm not sure what happened there. I must have somehow hit the button. I'm fired. Okay. My opinion, now that I've already said it, I mean, it was the only decision. There's no other decision. What they don't know any more than anybody else does. So what they gotta do is just remove him from it because, I mean, if it comes out that the allegations are true, then they're selling millions and millions of copies. Well, maybe not millions of copies because people are gonna be so offended and disgusted by him being on the cover that they won't even buy the game. And they gotta cover themselves. And I mean, it stinks. It stinks if this is a false accusation and he, you know, misses out on this. But I mean, on the grand scheme of things, this isn't gonna hurt him. He's a 3-time Stanley Cup champion. He's appeared on the cover of, an EA NHL game. You take him off the game. I mean, what else do you do? You leave him on and then it comes out that, you know, he's found guilty. That's going to hurt game sales. You're going to...
Yeah, and...
But yeah.
I I actually didn't realize this, but Puck Daddy, after we talked about the story last week, Puck Daddy came out with The Revelation, which I had forgotten completely about. NHL 2004 actually had a cover change as well. Originally, Danny Heatley was going to be the cover
boy. Accident, right? Where he was driving?
Yeah. Yeah, he was driving a vehicle, killed his teammate, Dan Snyder, and was charged with vehicular homicide. They removed Danny Heatley from the cover and replaced him with one Joe Sakic, Hall of Famer. So, yeah, I mean, it's not the first time that they've had to do it,
but
which I didn't realize that, but it's totally justified.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't see why, I mean, I've seen a lot, like, not a lot, but I mean, I've seen enough people, like, complaining about how, like, you know, you're pretty much making him look guilty to people by doing this, and that's absurd. No, it's probably best for him to not, I mean, he doesn't have time to, I mean, if he's going to be defending himself, he doesn't have time to be going around promoting a video game. He's got a much more pressing matters at the moment that he's got to deal with. But I really just, I just hope that it's not true, because
yeah,
you don't like seeing stuff like this happen. And I'd rather it just be the case of just somebody trying to, you know, because I have no opinion. I know nothing. I'm not going to say what I think, because I don't think anything. But I do think that they had no choice but to remove him from the game. Anything else would have been the wrong decision, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's the only decision they could have made. Whether it's right or wrong does not matter. It's the only decision they can make. They can't afford the risk.
They need to sell games, not, you know, like, they don't need to morally try to, like, back him, you know, by, like, say, we're keeping him on the game because we support him, because that's going to look terrible, really, either way. Because, I mean, you got people out there saying that Kane's guilty either way, which is absurd, but...
Absurd.
But, I mean, you just, all they can worry about is their own end. They don't have to back Patrick Kane. They don't have to back the Blackhawks. They don't have to back the NHL in that sense, or the NHLPA. They need to worry about selling video games so they can keep getting the rights to using these characters, quotes, in their game. And,
yeah.
I mean, what else can you do? There's nothing else. There's no other option.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And you actually brought up Hulk Hogan. After that, 2K Sports actually announced, shortly after that revelation, that the Hulkster will actually not be in WWE 2K16 as well. So
he's out,
that's not even.
Jeez.
Yeah, he's out of the game completely.
You know, and here's the thing, like that there, because all the things about Hogan, are they not based on a recording of him during his sex tape? If I'm not mistaken, a lot of the conversation, was it not during, like audio that he, I don't know, I really have not been following, because I am not a Hulk Hogan fan. I like making fun of him, but that's it. I have not liked Hulk Hogan since 1987. So,
yeah, I'm not even 100% sure on the story. I just saw that it came out, and what I found to be odd about that story in particular is that, one, it happened 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Two, it happened when he was angry about something his daughter was doing, and it was, you know, whatever. But the other thing that I was kind of suspicious about is that many people, African Americans who worked with Hogan, said that he never ever treated them with anything but respect.
Yeah, same thing I saw. Like, I saw guys like Booker T. I mean, let's be fair, he called Hogan the N-word at one point on live television, so he doesn't really, man, that's still one of the best clips on the internet. You know the one I'm talking about, I hope. The Booker T one?
Yeah, Booker, I can't even recall. I just know that I saw, Kamala had come out and said that he always sees him, always calls him brother. And
Kamala is not one to not, you know,
ever speak out.
You know, and tell the truth. Well, like, he's a pretty honest guy. Like, he's like anything I've seen, like, with him, and that he had his feet removed.
Yeah, he had
because of was it because of diabetes or?
I think it's diabetes.
Yeah,
yes.
And but really seems like a nice man. But he always came across as just like someone like a pretty straight shooter, anyways. Though his character might not have depicted that in real life. He seems like a pretty solid guy. And yeah, you know, I think that, and especially like, I mean, a lot of people, Hogan never, people don't generally outside WWE, don't give Hogan the benefit of the doubt. Generally, anybody will take the, if Hogan messes up, anybody and everybody will come out to say Hulk Hogan messed up. Just because majority of people don't like Hulk Hogan. Yeah. So if this stuff's going on and you have like African American people saying, you know what, in the years I've worked with him, I've never known him to be a do I like what Hulk Hogan said? No. Do I think what he said was right? No. Do I think that there's the possibility that it was just a personal conversation that he was emotional about, and does that justify it? No. But, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I think WWE is just, they're doing the right thing. They're doing the same thing EA did, and as of right now, it's the only decision. Is to take him out.
It is.
However, I've actually read that there's been, like, some talks of him being taken out. Like, when they took him, like, when everything started happening, he was not only taken off of, like, the alumni section, but he was also removed from the Hall of Fame section.
Yes. He was removed from, like, everything.
people were saying that they were going to remove him from is he going to be out of the Hall of Fame? No, he's not going out of the Hall of Fame. I guarantee no matter how this turns out, in the next couple of years, Hogan's going to be slowly reintroduced. He's Hulk Hogan.
Oh, absolutely.
He is Hulk Hogan.
Yeah. And he's one of the main reasons why WWE is as big as it is today.
I like saying it, but he is the reason, with the help of obviously Vince McMahon, that it is what it is.
Well, Paul will tell you that it's Andy Kaufman.
Yeah, Paul, you know what? I think that Andy Kaufman is the reason it became more socially acceptable, maybe? Not socially acceptable, it's not the right wording. As far as celebrities, like introducing it, like the cross from professional wrestling to Hollywood, which helped it grow in popularity and you know, they might not have gotten Mr. T for, like, WrestleMania, and they might not have, you know, gotten, like, the Cyndi Laupers over the years and all those people to be a part of it because of him. But, I mean, Hulkamania. Yeah, Hulkamania is what did it. Paul. I'm going to talk to him after this.
Absolutely. And, I kind of look at Andy Kaufman and Hulk Hogan as actually kind of both integral parts of where wrestling is today. But what we're going to do, we're going to move on to the next story, which actually is going to be a little bit more of a discussion, which we'll try to burn through kind of quickly here. But I think it's a kind of an interesting topic that I heard based on a news story that came out this week. So let's just get right on it. Additional music, you know, a little Hammer Brothers theme. Either way, I heard on a news story this week, references to a news article interview with Hideki Miyazaki, I guess is his name. I love Japanese names.
Incredible.
They were talking about Dark Souls 3, which is due to come out in the next year, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Early next year is when it's coming out. And one of the things that they were actually talking about in the article that I want to focus on with you, Ryan, is bosses and the design of bosses. Miyazaki was asked about his philosophy in designing Dark Souls bosses, both from aesthetic and gameplay perspectives. After being disappointed in the variety and visual design of Dark Souls 2 boss fights, Dark Souls 3 is taking a vastly different turn, a vastly different approach. Miyazaki said, quote, "One of the elements I want to bring to boss character designs is contradiction. We have the Dancer of the Frigid Valley. She's definitely a formidable enemy, but at the same time, players sense not only that it's scary, but that there's a sense of sadness. Contradicting elements, that's something I want to bring to boss character design. Not just fearful enemies, but something more that can be sensed from each boss character." That's something that I really struck home with me when I heard it, and I thought it would make for an interesting topic, because if you'll recall, over the years we've had so many different styles of bosses that you basically fight, anything from Bowser, who is very simple and straightforward, not only in his design and how you approach playing against him, but really in his motivation, and you never really felt any kind of sympathy for him. You just want to take him out.
The princess.
Yeah, I think that adding a certain layer of whether it's the contradiction as he speaks of it or mystery, uncertainty, I think that video games and our immersion into the video game stories can really benefit from this, from this kind of approach. What are your thoughts on boss fights and how they've been in the past, present? What would you like to see from boss fights in the future? How do you think that video game companies should approach it? Does it depend on the type of game that you're actually playing?
I think it definitely depends on the type of game. I mean, I think like anybody, boss fights are, I mean, that's why, it's like depending again on the game, that's why you play those kinds of games, is getting to the boss and defeating the boss. And I think, like, you know, like, I've already mentioned on the show, but, like, God of War, one of the reasons I love that game was the boss fights in it. Like, the boss, like, it's, like, number three, like, at the beginning of the game, you fight Poseidon, and it's just, like, unlike anything, like, at the time anyways, where it's, like, just, like, he's so monstrous, but it's, like, he's just got, like, limbs coming from everywhere with, like, horse heads on it, and it was just, like, it was an element to, like, just, like, that kind of, like, gameplay that I'd never, and that's why, like, I mean, that game had me right away, because I was like, this is awesome. Even to go back all the way to, like, Nintendo, I love, like, I don't know if anyone remembers the game Cobra Triangle, which was also on my top 10 games list, which was on the massive list of games A to Z, which you can see on TuneShow.com. There was, like, at the end, the big boss was a dragon. And it was absurd. It was silly. It was just like, it was kind of like, it was a little bit more high-tech than Bowser was in the original Mario game. That element of, like, yeah, you know, like, he was moving, which was cool, but he was also shooting fireballs, which were moving separately. So at the time, that was, like, incredibly complex, because you didn't have to worry about just, like, Bowser jumping up and down, shooting fireballs at you.
Yeah.
You know what? It was actually the exact same thing. Jeez. There's no difference. They just repackaged it and made him a different dragon. Oh, I'm so mad at Nintendo now.
Yeah. And one of the things that I would love to see that we haven't really seen, because I am big into stories, sometimes I would just love to see an exploration as to why. Why is this boss doing this? Mm-hmm. Not so much say, this person's evil and you must destroy him because, well, I'm doing what's in the best interest of my character, but why? What brought this boss character to be so sadistic or mean or...
Why are
they? Like I said, I mean, there's a tinge of sadness to it. Like, why? Why are they sad? What is it about that character? Why are they sad? Why are they doing what they do? Because I think that one of those things we always look at, even in whether it's video games or comic books, does anybody really care in the comic books why somebody, like, say, yeah, Doomsday? Why? What? Like, I mean, I know that Doomsday is probably a bad example, but there are a number of different characters, and I think X-Men probably did the best exploration of some of the characters and why they came to where they're at, but that's one of the most interesting parts about those stories.
It's always unanswered, usually.
Yeah, because it's not like people, are born wanting to be bad.
You know, that's interesting, and it's kind of like disappointing, yet confusing to me, because especially now, games are huge now. They're, you know, they make so many, like, you so many follow-ups, I mean, to games.
Yeah.
In the world we are, like, where video games have gotten to a point where there's so much storytelling, and yet you bring, this is a great point, like, why is there no explanation of these, the, quote, bad guys? I'm amazed that with the amount of games and, like the stories and, like, the videos that they have throughout games to tell the story, that there hasn't been, like, like a prequel. I would love to see a game make a prequel where you are the bad guy.
Yes.
And you find out why they are. Who knows? Like, maybe Bowser was a hero. Maybe Bowser had a girl that he loved, and she was going to be his princess. And some, like Shy Guy came, or, you know, like, one of the bombs, Bob Bomb, came and blew her up. Maybe he's trying to get princess because his princess was taken away. And maybe it's because he thinks Mario did it. Because Shy Guy wears red, and he kind of is dressed like Mario. So he's like, it was just a misunderstanding. That could have been a video game. The worst and the stupidest story video game ever. But I think for other video games, with better bosses, you can make much more interesting stories. Have Zeus.
But
show me, like, a God of War game where you show me why... Oh, God, who was the original God of War? I forgot his name. Ah! I don't want to say Zeus because I know why he turned into a super jerk, but... because you take over the job of the... Ares. Ares was the original God of War. And, like, they could have, like, a story where you're Ares and you find out how he became. Right? I mean, and it just makes sense because it just means more games. And it means more sales.
Exactly.
And it means, like...
Even, like, the way we approach, like, say, the sub-bosses... And because most of the bosses have, like, level bosses, which is what I'm referring to when I say sub-bosses. But if you're a hero all the time, why do you gotta kill the bad guys and the sub-bosses and the bosses? Oh, why can't you have the option to, like, show mercy? Mm-hmm. Or do something like that. I mean, you watch, even, like, Assassin's Creed. Like, you go through it, and obviously you're an assassin, so you have to kill a bunch of people. But... there's always that thing, and there's that one thing where he kills the person, but you can tell that the main character, Ezio, feels guilty about it, and not necessarily, he doesn't feel guilty about it, that's the wrong word. He's respectful of the person that he kills, and that's kind of one of those, I'm talking about Assassin's Creed 2, that's a nice twist, because it's not just, I'm going to mindlessly kill this person and moving on, he's respecting the creed of the assassins, which is to respect the target. Now, whenever you come to the sub-bosses, though, if you're supposed to be the good guy, why does it destroy everything? And, I mean, in reality, you don't know anything about it, about these characters necessarily, besides, oh, that's the bad person. And like you said, I would die to have a game where you play the whole game, and in the end, you actually turn out that you're actually the bad guy, and you didn't realize it the whole time. Or they come up with some moral dilemma like that.
That would be cool.
It would be incredible.
Like, oh, man, I've been killing all these good people this whole time. I'm such a douche. Yeah.
Like, the whole time you've been doing it, like, the whole time you've been playing it, you've been just completely wrecking people's lives, and that person, like, the end boss... Like, let you know, look, this is the evidence. And they just point out all the things that you've done and how they've affected everybody.
Everything. Like, you're playing, like, Super Mario on Super Nintendo, and you get to Bowser, and he's like, man, all those Koopas that you just, like, killed basically to get to me, they were, like, special keys that were going to, like, save the universe. But you've killed all of
they
them.
Had children.
And now there's no hope. You've killed everybody. You're a real asshole, Mario. Dick move.
Yeah.
Dick move.
They were the last ones. They were the baby tortoises, and now there's no Koopas.
Hope.
You have
They're our last hope for...
created an extinction-level event.
Our last hope is repopulating. And you killed them.
Yeah. I mean, just imagine, like... I mean, because we're so good at story... Like you said, the games are so big. We're so good at storytelling. We have all these options, but I can't recall, at least, of a game that's actually explored that. What if you're the bad guy the whole time? Or... why can't there be, like, this thing where you get to the end boss and you know exactly what his motivations are? And you really have the up, like, I mean, you just, there's got to be a way to send some sort of twist. I want those layers. I want to feel not, like, maybe I have to defeat the person instead of I just have to do it. I mean, you know, there's got to be some sort of motivation. I want to feel bad for having to be put in that situation. And maybe that's the right way to say it. If I'm going to be immersed in the story, I want to feel bad for my character who is put into that situation where he's got to stop that person. I guess would be the way to say it.
I mean, you know what the worst part is? Is these games are going to come out because somebody was listening to Toon Show and they stole our wicked awesome ideas.
Yeah, and then I'd be like, sorry, you're getting new.
Sorry, guys. That's the problem with coming up with really good ideas and then giving them out for free on the internet. Who knew that could backfire?
It'll be a game featuring cats, and they'll be like, you said no cats.
I would be so mad. That's what I'm talking.
But either way, I think it's an awesome idea. I think it's something, not so much idea, I think it's an awesome topic. I would love to hear everybody's thoughts on it. So hit us up at toonshow@gmail.com. Send us what you think. What do you like about bosses? What are some of your favorite bosses? How would you like to see bosses developed in the future?
And is Mario
what
asshole?
Are some of the things that you actually... Yeah, is Mario a dickhead? So just let us know. I mean, hit us up. If you can't remember toonshow@gmail.com, just remember toonshow.com and hit up the contact form. Let us know who you are. If you don't want to, you know, that's fine too. I don't have a problem with that. I just want to know what you think. I mean, who are your favorite bosses? What do you like about those bosses? What would you like to see from a boss?
Besides God of War 3. Oh, no. Mike Tyson's punch out. The winner, because it's impossible. You know what? And that was, I think I read a little bit further in that article, because the chance of having bosses change their strategies mid- like having them like figure out how you fight and then adjusting to that, which I think happens in like hockey games as well. There's a word for that that someone smart probably knows, but I can't think of it right now. But
there's
a lot of games, especially Nintendo games. I actually saw a video last week with a guy who played Mike Tyson's punch out blindfolded. And he got all the, he did not beat Mike Tyson because apparently with the coding on Mike Tyson, he's the only character in that game whose strategy actually changes from time to time. Like, whereas he says something about how there's like this, like, there's either a 2 to a 3 second pause that automatically changes every time you play him. So though all the other characters are going to come at you with the exact same strategy, he was able to beat all of them. He got to Mike Tyson, and he was not able to beat him because of that.
That's awesome.
But it just shows, like, I mean, that's one thing where it's like, I mean, it's just characters are just continuously the exact same thing, and it'd be cool if they could find other ways to make it so that they adjust so you don't go and play the game. You could play it again, and he's going to be tougher the next time. Or halfway through it, because he figures out that you keep friggin' trapping him in the corner and mashing the buttons. Street Fighter would have been a lot harder for other people if they did that. Nobody would have beat that game.
Yeah, seriously. I think it's great. And adaptive bosses are awesome. I love that
so
idea.
Much.
And certainly, they have all the algorithms and all that figured out to where they can do it. It's interesting. I definitely want to hear from the listeners what they think. What we're going to do now, usually we do like a review of any new games that we played this week, but I'm pretty confident to say that we haven't played any new games this week. Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
So,
Sorry.
Yeah, sorry, we forgot that. I have some new games that I'm going to be checking out here at the house. So next week, I promise, I review on a new game.
Hopefully nobody waited 2 hours for that portion of the show.
I know. Anyway. This is the longest episode yet. And I even told my wife, I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to do a short episode before I lay down. Yeah, this is not a short episode.
I apologize. Long-winded.
No, you're good. It's all good. It's awesome because it's been good conversation. So what we're going to do before we close out the show, we're going to go over the upcoming releases for this week. Hey, apparently I made a mistake during the recording of this episode of Toons Game Time, pulling the wrong dates worth of video games for release dates for this week. However, I decided to make that up to you by actually redubbing this, unfortunately, without Ryan. However, it is important. There are a lot of games, so let me get right to it. And then we'll get back to the closeout of the show. For August 18th, you've got The Adventures of Pip coming out for the PS4, The Bridge for the PS4, PS3, Vita, and Ouya, also on the 18th, Curses and Chaos for the PS4 and the Vita, Final Fantasy Type-0 for the PC is also coming out on August the 18th. Helldivers Super Earth Ultimate Edition, which is a PS4 disc with a PS3 and Vita digital code. So you can get all three versions of that game as well on Tuesday. Pure Hold'em comes out for the PS4 on the 18th, for the PC on the 20th, and the Xbox One on the 21st. Also, Resident Evil Revelations 2 will come out for the Vita on the 18th. Tales from the Borderlands Episode 4 Escape Plan Bravo for the PS4, PS3, and PC on the 18th. For the Xbox One and 360 on the 19th. And iOS and Android applications will be available on the 20th. Now, also on the 18th, Volume for the PS4, Vita, and the PC. Zombie for Xbox One, PS4, and PC. Bob Was Hungry will actually come out for the PC on the 19th. As will Call of Duty Black Ops 3 Beta will actually be released. So if you're into Call of Duty Black Ops, the beta will be coming out for the PS4 on Wednesday. That's a pretty big deal for a lot of people out there. Also, Smite will be coming out for the Xbox One on the 19th. As will Velocity 2X, which will be out for the Xbox One as well as the PC. The Bridge, a new Wii U title, will actually be coming out on the 20th, as will Rimmed Racer for the PC, Shadowrun Hong Kong for the PC, Trine 3 for the PC, and on the 21st, you will see The Flock for the PC, LBX Little Battlers Experience for the 3DS, and Risen 3 Enhanced Edition for the PS4. That's going to do it for this week in video games. And now, let's get back to the previously recorded segment of our show. Find Ryan on Twitter at RyanNoble66. That's RyanNoble66. Easy to do. Search him out. Tell him you like him. Tell him you don't like him.
Oh, that's fine.
Don't tell him you don't like him.
No, I get that too. It's fine.
Tell him you don't like cats.
Oh, man. You know what? You can say what you want about me, but the second you bring cats into it, I'm no longer going to be your stereotypical
Black
Canadian. I will just become a ball of rage.
Black and be put in for spam.
Yeah. Give me a follow. Shit talk me. Whatever. Whatever you gotta do.
Yeah. Also, check out Ryan's website, which is theveryberrycolts.com. Or theveryberrycoltsblog.com. Do that for him and for me. If you'd like to reach me, you can find me on Twitter at ToonBrian. Go to ToonShow.com. Just follow the Be a Loony tab. Find all the contact information. Thank you very much for taking the time to listen. I know we rambled on, but that's only because Ryan and I haven't talked forever.
Wild.
So you are the recipient of that. Whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, we're going to leave that completely up to you.
Either way, you're welcome.
But until next week. Yeah. But until next week, I thank you very much for listening. And we'll see you then.